Sports Radio.
My name is Gary Parrish, columnist, television analyst, CBS Sports. I'm in for Jim Rome, and I'm coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Steve Kyler covers the NBA for Basketball Insiders. He's going to be with me in the next segment. Now, I want to talk about Bryce Harper's return to D.C. tonight. Going to do that a little later on this hour. But right now, the breaking news. The Alliance of American Football is reportedly suspending all football operations today. Here is the story at CBSSports.com. The Alliance of American Football may end before capping off its inaugural season. CBS Sports spoke to a source close to the AAF and could confirm that operations were suspended, at least for the day, and probably indefinitely. CBS Sports is reporting that it cannot confirm whether the league is folding, but it does appear headed that direction. I'd like to tell you it's surprising, but it's not, because when Tom Dundon, who committed to invest $250 million into the league and by extension took control of the league, when he came out in recent weeks and said that he didn't know if the league would be sustainable without cooperation from the NFL Players Association, that seemed to be the writing on the wall, because the NFLPA was never going to agree to let them use its young players. You do not want, if you're the NFL, your young players playing football in what is the NFL offseason. Football is a violent game, and you don't want that wear and tear and just the miles put on those bodies. You want to keep your young players, people who might be a decent fit for the Alliance of American Football. You'd want to keep them around your facility, working out under your monitor, not taking the type of hits that football players, especially quarterbacks in this league, have been taking in the Alliance of American Football. And really, the whole thing has been strange from the jump. Some background. I live in Memphis, so my hometown has an Alliance of American Football franchise, or at least had. And so, you know, I'd spent a lot of time talking about this and talking to people about this. And Charlie Eversaw, who, ran the league initially, every time I heard him speak about it, he sounded really, I came across going, okay, maybe, I came away from it saying, okay, maybe this thing will work, because he sounded sharp, and he had answers for everything. Like, every time you asked him a question about, well, you know, this other league did not succeed, this other league did not flourish, is there a market for a developmental football league? Why is this going to be successful when so many other leagues have not been? He had answers for everything. And they weren't the type of answers that made you go, yeah, that's not going to work. He sounded believable. And one of the first things I heard him say is that because of television agreements and money that they had in place, that they weren't going to have to take off immediately to be able to make it, that this was going to be around, even if it wasn't a success, going to be around for a while. And I just took him at his word, because I didn't know why you'd make up such a thing. But it became clear, after week one, that the league was in deep trouble, because there was a report that said they were having trouble meeting payroll and would not have been able to do it if not for Tom Dundon stepping in. And though the league initially denied that the report was accurate, the subsequent reporting suggested that it was closer to true than not true, which is just amazing to me, because I don't know how you launch a league and can't make payroll payments, or at least be at risk of not being able to make payroll payments after 1 week. Like, I got to understand how you'd launch a league, you've got it all planned out, and then it just doesn't go as planned, like your life doesn't sometimes. But the idea that so quickly they were in trouble is bananas. Because think about it this way. There are millions of people, unfortunately, in this country, who get in over their heads financially. They commit to a car, commit to a house. And you look up, maybe it's 6 months later, maybe it's 6 years later, your circumstances have changed. Maybe you had a job that you lost. You had multiple jobs and one of them fell through. Your pay got cut. Anything that somebody in your family, somebody in my family, one of our neighbors, we all know people who fall into this category. And so you secure a mortgage, you move into a house, and then 5 years later or 15 years later, because something has happened, you can't afford the house anymore. And you look up and you go, I don't know how I'm going to make this mortgage payment. And I don't know how I'm going to make next month's mortgage payment. Then you lose the home. It's a pretty common, sad story. But you don't move in the home and then like, I don't know how I'm going to make my first payment. Like you usually got that figured out, right? Like, okay, my first payment's going to be X amount of dollars. I got that covered. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this. Now, it might not take you long to get to a place where you can't make the payments. Maybe 6 months. Maybe 6 years. Maybe you're just a terrible planner as opposed to something happened with one of your jobs. Or I say one of your jobs like everybody has multiple jobs just because I have like 11. Something happens with your job that makes it where, okay, I thought I was going to be able to do this, but now I can't. But you're going to be able to make the first month mortgage. Like, you're not going to buy a car and then go, I don't know how I'm going to make this first payment. Boy. And yet that is what happened with the Alliance of American Football. They started a league and then were like, we don't have any money. Well, what? And then Tom Dundon commits to invest $250 million. He didn't actually, like, throw $250 million at the league. He's not going to lose $250 million. But the reports are he's going to lose about $70. And if he wouldn't have committed that $70, the league probably would have had to shut down several weeks ago. I mean, maybe after week one. And so he saves it at least temporarily, but then comes out in recent weeks and says, we're not going to be able to sustain as a league. And I'm paraphrasing here, but this is essentially what he said. We will not be able to sustain as a league, to be a league, if we do not have cooperation from the NFL Players Association. If we can't, we don't have access to their players, we can't be a developmental league, which means we can't be the league that we want to be, which means we cannot be a league. And perhaps he's right, but I don't know. I've never played in a football league, but it seems like that's something you'd maybe talk about before you launch the league. Like if the prevailing thought is we cannot be this league without cooperation from the NFL Players Association, I'd like to think if I were in the room, I would have held my hand up and said, okay, then before we launch the league, maybe we should ask them if we're going to have their cooperation. If we can't do this without them, let's make sure we have them on board before we try to do it. Otherwise, what are we doing? And yet it appears those conversations either didn't take place or they didn't go where the Alliance of American Football needed them to go. Because now here we are, 8 weeks into a season, 2 weeks before the regular season schedule is supposed to be completed, and football operations have been suspended. And again, the idea that a minor league football league did not work out shouldn't be surprising. That is the history of minor league football leagues. But the fact that it isn't sustainable for the reasons that they've stated just means that it was terrible planning on the front end, because there was never going to be a scenario where they were filling up stadiums to watch minor league football. That just wasn't going to happen. It was going to be an interesting television property, perhaps, but they were never going to fill up stadiums. I mean, perhaps I just knew that because of where I lived and I knew the history of minor league football in Memphis or minor league sports in Memphis, but I never thought they were going to get any more than 5,000-6,000 people for a game in Memphis. And then remarkably, they luck up and get Johnny Manziel in the league. Like when I would talk about this league when it first launched, if you were asking me to imagine how it might get some interest, I would have said, well, you need somebody like Johnny Manziel in the league. You need somebody like Colin Kaepernick in the league, somebody that will grab headlines. And then, because he got banned from the Canadian Football League, but however it happened, the Alliance of American Football lucks into Johnny Manziel. And then the Memphis franchise lucks into Johnny Manziel. And then Mike Singletary, for reasons that will never make any sense, wouldn't just make him the starter. It's like, what? The only thing people care about with this team or this league at this point is Johnny Manziel. And instead, Mike Singletary's like, no, he's our backup quarterback. What? It should be a league requirement. If you have Johnny Manziel on your team, you have to play him because we're the Alliance of American Football. And it's stupid not to. Like when Johnny Manziel was actually on the field for Memphis, people were watching and tweeting about it. Why wouldn't you just commit to doing that? Like, what? I mean, just, it would have been like, you can't have the job if you don't play Johnny Manziel. hey, we just lucked into getting Johnny Manziel on our roster. Are you going to start him at quarterback? No. Well, then you're not our coach anymore. Our coach will be anybody on the planet who understands that for obvious reasons we have to start Johnny Manziel. So, like, even when they lucked into the Johnny Manziel situation, they didn't play it right. And I know that's no fault of the league, I don't guess, unless, you know, as a league you could have said, Memphis, you play Johnny Manziel every snap until he's concussed or doesn't show up because he's in a nightclub in West Hollywood, but he's got to be on the field. It's Johnny Manziel. He's the only thing people care about. Either way, it appears the Johnny Manziel Memphis Express era is over. It's come to a close because the reports from multiple media outlets today, the Alliance of American Football is suspending all football operations at the very least temporarily and probably forever. Steve Kyler covers the NBA for Basketball Insiders. He's going to join me next. I'm Gary Parrish. I'm in for Jim Rome.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show. Radio.
Bryce Harper is returning to Washington, D.C. tonight as a member of the Phillies. We're going to get into that in the next segment. But right now, Steve Kyler, he covers the NBA for Basketball Insiders. He joins me on the Jim Rome Show. Steve, it's Gary Parrish. How you doing, man?
Gary, I'm well, my friend. How are you?
Everything's good in my world. I appreciate you being here, and I want to start with a story I mentioned earlier in the show, and that's the Kristaps Porzingis story. Obviously, an ugly allegation, but some more reporting from Adrian Wojnarowski last night at ESPN.com, combined with a statement from Michelle Roberts that says, we, as a Players Association, stand with Kristaps. It suggests that even in a world where it is now the safest thing to do is believe the accuser, don't be dismissive, it seems that this allegation of sexual assault against Porzingis, it doesn't appear that it's going to go anywhere. By all accounts, the woman seems not believable. Is that the way you read it as well?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, as you said, you always want to take these kind of accusations very seriously because I think we've seen, especially over the last couple of years, even the people, the cornerstones in industry that you would think would be so far above all of this stuff are caught up in it. So you don't want to be overly dismissive, but, you know, you wait a year before you file charges. You go to the New York Knicks legal department with, you know, a document that doesn't even have the guy's name spelled right. You're trying to get money. There's emails and text messages. It doesn't seem like what it's being made out to be in terms of, you know, a legitimate, you know, assault. And then you factor in, I don't know if you've ever hurt your knee, but if I tore my ACL, I think I'd be pretty easy to overcome. So there's just a lot of things in all of this that just don't line up to it being as credible. But again, you don't want to be overly dismissive either. These are very serious things. And like I said, you know, historically we've heard stranger things from people that you would have never thought would be caught up in it.
I'm talking to Steve Kyler from Basketball Insiders. He's on Twitter at Steve Kyler NBA. Let's turn our attention to the court, or perhaps stay off the court, because LeBron James has been shut down for the rest of the season. Was it a no-brainer for the Lakers to do this?
I think so. And you know, the reality is, what is he playing for? You know, he had his first big career injury where he missed the most games. Why not shut him down, get him right, get him off the court? The last thing you want, and you think about, you remember Derrick Rose's torn ACL, the end of a game that didn't matter, that didn't help the playoffs, and they lost him for 2 years. You know, given how the season's gone, you probably want to wrap him in bubble wrap and just try to put him in a really safe place, because everything the Lakers are going to do going forward is about maximizing this window with LeBron, and you don't want something silly at the end of a regular season that doesn't matter to derail all of that.
What's the future look like for LeBron James in L.A.? Because I, and clearly I was wrong, but I just assumed that one way or another, they'd figure out a way to get stars there. He would be good. They would be good. Now they're sitting here headed for the lottery, and there's no obvious way for them to attain the type of talent to put around LeBron that they planned on obtaining. Is this going to is he ever going to be a serious contender for a championship again with the Lakers?
That's the big question. I think there's a window here where maybe it's not going to be Anthony Davis and Kevin Durant, that it's going to be DeMarcus Cousins and Jimmy Butler. And that might not be bad, but I think this year was kind of this perfect storm of LeBron missing so many games, Lonzo Ball missing games. They were ravaged through injuries, and they didn't get away with that in the Eastern Conference, or maybe last year's Eastern Conference, but you can't do it in the West. You're playing too many good teams. All of the teams come in ready to hunt, and, you know, the reality was the Lakers were the 7th, 8th best team in the West on their best day, and they never got to be their best day. And then you started to see, too, that the gap between what LeBron really needs in a teammate and what some of these young guys are isn't necessarily the no-brainer fit that maybe some Laker fans wanted to be.
Talking to Steve Kuyler from Basketball Insiders. He's on Twitter, at Steve Kuyler, NBA. So what is your prediction? What's the biggest name player who will be playing with LeBron James in L.A. next season?
I think, like I said, I think it's going to be a DeMarcus Cousins, Jimmy Butler kind of thing. You know, maybe the upgrade there is Kemba Walker at point guard. I don't think that you're going to get, you know, a Kawhi Leonard there. I certainly don't think you're going to get Kevin Durant there. You know, the idea of a Kyrie Irving reunion, I don't think that's going to happen either. So it'll be the next tier of guys. And, you know, LeBron has done really well with the next tier of guys. When it's been an alpha and an alpha, it's been kind of a problem. So somebody that's willing to be the number two guy to LeBron or pick up the slack when LeBron wants to take a play or a game off like we've seen him do, you know, this year, that there's somebody who's more than capable but also doesn't have to carry the load either. And I think the other part is you got to be mentally tough to play with LeBron. You know, the passive-aggressive stuff, the comments in the media, and the way the Lakers are going to be covered both on and off the court. You've got to have somebody who can take all of that and still be a pretty good player. And that's why I say DeMarcus Cousins, Jimmy Butler look more likely in terms of fit. And both of those guys are going to want big numbers, and they may find a marketplace that doesn't have as many offers for them as maybe the Lakers are going to make.
The Golden State Warriors are sitting here at 52-24, one-game lead atop the Western Conference standings. Are we watching Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green play together as Warriors for the last time right now?
It seems that way. There's something not right with the whole Kevin Durant part of that equation, and I think the writing's on the wall that not only is he going to look, that he's probably going to exit, but I always say this, you know, the way you feel in March and April is not how you're going to feel in June when you're hoisting a championship trophy and maybe getting another MVP. And that could be a blessing and a curse, because then it might be, well, I don't have anything else to do here. I've done everything I can. Let's go find a new challenge. So it can go both ways. But I think it's pretty clear that Kevin Durant isn't necessarily at peace with everything that's going on in Golden State. Not quite the way, say, a Klay Thompson and a Steph Curry and even a Draymond Green. Those guys keep talking about the long term and the history. You don't hear that as much from Kevin Durant.
It seems like Kevin went there thinking that if he could be the best player on a championship-level team, it would vault him to best player on the planet status, and also he would be loved the way I guess most people want to be loved. And yet, that's still Steph's franchise. LeBron has mostly carried the label of best player on the planet, and it seems like whatever he was hoping to get by going to Golden State, I mean, he's got championships. They're on the Wikipedia page forever. But whatever status he was hoping to obtain, it just seems like he hasn't been able to do it at Golden State. And so he's ready to go try to get those things somewhere else.
You know, the one thing he said when he moved to Golden State that I always hang on to was he felt like if he stayed in Oklahoma City, he wouldn't evolve as a player, that he'd just be the same guy over and over because the environment would require and produce that. The challenge of going to Golden State was to be more efficient, be a better defensive player, and as you said, become the best player on the planet. I think he's checked some of those boxes. His efficiency has been incredibly crazy. But I don't think that he's gotten the personal satisfaction out of all of this. You see it. He's grumpy. And normally this is the nicest guy you could meet. You know, always has a smile on his face, always willing to talk to somebody. And there's just something not right in all of this. And I think that, you know, there's a blessing and a curse. And, you know, Rich DeVos, the late Rich DeVos, the Orlando Magic, said it to Dwight Howard: be careful what you wish for from another team. Because when you change teams, then you kind of become a mercenary. And then all the people don't love you quite the way you think they're going to. And I think Kevin Durant's dealing with that on a day-to-day basis, because everything in his world seems to be negative. But I think some of that he brings on himself.
I am talking to Steve Kuyler, covers NBA for Basketball Insiders. He's on Twitter, at Steve Kuyler NBA. My friends here in New York are convinced that Kevin Durant's coming to New York. Are you convinced Kevin Durant's coming to New York?
there's an awful lot of smoke there. And I think if it wasn't for the Rich Kleinman, his business manager and agents, longtime connection to New York, the fact that he's got so much of his media company is based in New York. There was a lot made about moving offices, but those guys were mostly in New York already. But a lot of his business interests are there, and he's an East Coast guy, and his family's closer to there. And I think there's just so many little connect-the-dot moments in all of this that say New York is really viable. But then you're also talking about James Dolan still owns the team, and I think that would be the hurdle the Knicks are going to have to figure out how to climb. But, you know, Kevin's done the LeBron thing. He's done the short-term deals. He's insulated himself and kept power. His Nike deal's given him more money than he could ever want. So it's just about what's going to make Kevin happy, and I don't think anybody really knows that the answer to that question.
The 2019 NBA draft is a few months away. It seems like we already know who's going to be the number one pick. It'll be Zion Williamson. Are folks in the NBA, from franchise to franchise, sold that he's going to be a star? Often, you know, there's difference of opinions on guys, but it starts to seem like maybe there's a consensus with Zion, and everybody believes that, you know, what he's doing is going to be able to translate.
Yeah, he's going to be immensely popular day one. He's going to get a stupid shoe deal day one. I mean, all the things that kind of line you up to be in a position to be a star there for Zion. There are some physical negatives. You know, 280 is really big. It's Oliver Miller big. You know, 6'6", and you kind of play the five. You know, how does that all translate? But I think we've seen, you know, the Draymond Greens, who had kind of the same label, too small, too heavy, become an all-star, and maybe that's not the negative. And I think all of the potential pluses outweigh all of the potential risks. And I think especially when you look at the class, there's nobody even close to what Zion could be. But I don't think that it's a slam dunk lock that he's going to be a generational player like LeBron. But I'm pretty sure he's going to be the best player in this draft class without almost question.
I'm wrapping up here with Steve Kuyler, who covers the NBA for Basketball Insiders on Twitter, at Steve Kuyler NBA. Last thing before I let you go, got a few games left, but if you're voting today, who's your MVP?
You know, there are two guys that really, I think, just stand way out in the pack, and that's Giannis in Milwaukee and Nikola Jokic in Denver. You know, I'm in love with what James Harden's doing, and, you know, it's incredible. But what Giannis and Jokic have become, those are my two front runners, and for me, I'm going to go Giannis. I think how he's transformed his game and his team, and the fact that they may have home court all throughout, to me, I think that's the difference in terms of picking one over the other. But no question, James Harden in the discussion, but for me, my money's on Giannis.
It makes sense to me. That's Steve Kuyler from Basketball Insiders. You can read him there. Follow him on Twitter, at Steve Kuyler NBA. Thanks for being here, man. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, Gary. Be well.
You're the best. That's Steve Kuyler from Basketball Insiders. Bryce Harper returns to Washington, D.C. tonight as a member of the Philadelphia Phillies. Going to get into that in the next segment. But right now, here's the latest sports update.
From New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
I am Gary Parrish, columnist, television analyst, CBS Sports, filling in for Jim Rome. Thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. So the big baseball story, at the very least today, is Bryce Harper's return to Washington, D.C., going to be playing as a member of the Phillies against the Nationals, his former team, for the first time. Kind of neat that it comes so early in this baseball season, but he will be back inside Nationals Park tonight. And earlier today, he posted a nice message for National fans on Instagram, and it touched on all the normal things that people touch on when, you know, they leave a city or are coming back to a city for the first time after playing a prominent role for a franchise in that city, how he went from a boy to a man, how he, will never forget these times and the relationships that he created and developed and still maintains to this day. And he ended it this way. He said, "When I run on the field tonight, I am sure to hear some boos. but I will always remember the cheers and the screams that are still with me right now as I start my new chapter. So for that, DC, thank you. And I think that's probably smart to prepare for that, because he probably will hear some boos. You know, he left them in free agency. If he wanted to be a member of the Washington Nationals, right now he could be. They didn't trade him. They lost him. He left them. And I think most famously with LeBron James leaving Cleveland the first time, but certainly there are a million other examples throughout sports. When a player, even in free agency, leaves a franchise voluntarily, that player is usually not greeted favorably when the player returns. Now, when it's like demanded a trade while still under contract and we moved you, then it gets really bad. That's Kawhi Leonard going back to San Antonio. But typically fans feel, you know, fans love teams forever and always, no matter who the players are. If that weren't true, I'd given up being a Mets fan like 20 years ago at least. And you want, I guess on some level, the players to feel that way about that team. But this is their job, so they don't. But you're often disappointed, you know, when they leave you. And Bryce Harper left the Nationals. And so he, as he posted on Instagram, might hear some boos tonight. But I'm really not sure that Nationals fans should be upset with Bryce Harper. Like, if you wanted Bryce Harper to be a part of your franchise, I'm not sure you should be upset with him under the circumstances that he left. Because there's an interesting story that posted the Washington Post website last night, like in advance of Harper's return to D.C., the type of story any newspaper would do if somebody like Bryce Harper were coming back to that city. And this one was done really well. But it details, in great detail, the circumstances that led to Bryce Harper leaving the Washington Nationals. And I really don't see how you could blame him for leaving the Washington Nationals. As the story makes clear, and Bryce makes clear with his own words, he wanted to stay there. He wanted to be a member of the Washington Nationals forever. He just didn't want to take significantly less money to do it. And so, as Bryce tells the story, in the last home game of last season, when it started to look like he was going to leave Washington, but that's because people thought he wanted to leave Washington. He explains, I really didn't. And I wanted to get a deal done and thought we were going to get a deal done. And during that game, in a rain delay, he has presented an envelope from the controlling owner of the Washington Nationals, Ted Lerner. And he doesn't open it immediately, but it's a contract offer. And he eventually opens it, and what he sees is 10 years, $300 million. And that's what got reported. The Nationals have offered Bryce Harper a $300 million deal. So for months, it looked like he had a $300 million deal on the table, but would not accept it. Ah, he wants to leave. Turns out, roughly $100 million of that $300 million was deferred money, with the last payment, according to the Washington Post, not scheduled to be made until 2052. And he just didn't want deferred money. A, because he didn't want it, but B, because it's like not smart. He wanted years. He wanted a no trade clause. He wanted no opt outs. And he wanted all of the money inside the length of whatever contract he signed. That's what he made clear through Scott Boras's agent. So the Nationals offer that was on the table for so long, 10 years, $300 million, it wasn't a normal 10-year, $300 million contract, not according to the Washington Post. The last payment wouldn't be made till 2052, and about one-third of the $300 million, $100 million, was deferred money. So he goes nowhere. He's not taking that contract. But then the Lerner family reaches out to him and asks him to come to Palm Springs. It's 2 days before Christmas. And so he and his wife get a private plane, just because it's not easy from their home in Las Vegas to get to Palm Springs. They didn't want to connect. They didn't want, just so we'll just take the plane. Plus, we're about to sign a $300 million contract, so we can get the plane. So it's the only meeting that he took outside of his home in Las Vegas. I'll go meet with the Nationals owner in the Nationals owner's home. That's how much I want to get this done. So they have a nice meal. Ted Lerner's there. His wife, Annette Lerner, is there. And Bryce makes it clear to them, I want to play in Washington. I want to be a member of your franchise. Annette Lerner, according to the Washington Post, at one point looks at Ted and says, get this done. Get the deal done. And Bryce chimes in with Mrs. Lerner often makes good decisions. And he leaves that, and he tells his wife, we're going back to Washington. Prepare to go back to Washington. We're going to get this done. And then here's nothing. The next day. On January 3rd, the Nationals finally make another offer. And it's, according to the Washington Post, 12 years, $250 million. So the offer goes from 10 years, $300, $30 million a year, to 12 years, $250, $20.8 million per year. And lots of the money is still deferred. Some of it all the way to 2072. So they gave him more years, took away annual money. The deal is less, $50 million less than the initial one he turned down, and it still got deferred money in it, all the way to 2072. And so Bryce Harper, he gets Scott Boras and his team to look at, okay, what is this deferred money? Boras' people determined, whether they're right or wrong, I can't say for sure, but they determined the actual value of the contract would be about $107 million. And when they explained that to Bryce Harper, he's like, well, then that's what? Like, I made it clear to them what I wanted. I wanted years. I wanted no opt-out, because a lot of guys want opt-outs in their contracts. He didn't want it because he didn't want to have to deal with the question he had been asked for years. Well, where is he going next? I'm not going anywhere. I have no opt-out. I have a no-trade clause. I'm signing a 10-year contract, 12-year contract, $13 million contract. I'm here. That's the life he wanted. He was willing to take less money for more years with no deferred money, no trade clause, no opt-outs. Made it crystal clear. They come back and offer him, 12 years, but $250 million, lots of deferred money, all the way to 2072. And he said that after he got that offer, he went from, yes, I'm going back to Washington, to, damn, I could be going somewhere else. That was his quote to the Washington Post. After I got that offer, it hit me. Damn, I might be going somewhere else. And then, of course, the Phillies come in, and they offer 13 years, $330 million, all the money within the length of the contract, nothing deferred past 2031, which is when the contract is up. The contract expires 2031. He will have been paid all $330 million by that date, no trade, no opt-out. The Phillies gave him what he wanted. The Nationals simply didn't, and really didn't even come close. And so when you read that, like I read that last night, I don't know how you could be mad at Bryce Harper. Even if you're a Nationals fan, I don't understand how you can say Bryce Harper left us. Like when LeBron James left Cleveland the first time, I understood why you could be mad. I also understood why LeBron James would leave, but I understood why you could be mad. They'd given him keys to the franchise. It was his home. And then he left you for the bright lights of Miami, for Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. Like, I got it. Coincidentally, I happened to be in Cleveland the night that LeBron made that decision, because at that time, Nike was running a camp, and there was the LeBron James Skills Academy in Akron. And so most of the college basketball world was in the Akron-Cleveland area. And so I was in the Akron-Cleveland area, and we were in downtown Cleveland the night of the decision, in a bar, watching it with Cleveland people who live and die with that franchise. Obviously die more often than live. And by the time the television show started, there were reports out that he was probably leaving and probably going to Miami, but still these folks were hopeful. And when he said, taking my talents to South Beach, I watched adults who had never met LeBron James before cry in the middle of a bar. I watched a young woman, just tears start coming down her face. And subsequently, because I was actually doing some reporting, I was going to write about this, I just randomly picked a woman that seemed invested in this decision. And I started talking to her, and I was like, okay, why does this mean so much? Why does this hurt so much? Yeah, obviously, from a basketball perspective, it's devastating. You just lost the best player on the planet. But why are people crying? And she said, LeBron, she said, some of us who are ambitious, this lady was a lawyer. She went to law school, I think, in D.C. She said, some of us who live here, you know, who are ambitious, people are constantly telling us we've got to leave. You got to get out of here. You got to get to New York. You got to get to D.C. You got to get to L.A. You can't stay in Cleveland. And she said, but LeBron James stayed in Cleveland all these years. And we use that as a morale builder. Like, if LeBron doesn't think he has to leave Cleveland, then why do I have to leave Cleveland? Just because everybody tells me I can't get what I want to do done in Cleveland. And she said, now that's no longer true. Because LeBron did finally get to a place. He held out for a long time, but he finally got to a place where I've got to leave Cleveland. So now she was like, I'm a lawyer. Do I need to leave Cleveland too? The reason I stayed here, turned down bigger markets, is because, you know, don't tell me I can't do what I want to do in Cleveland. LeBron James can do what he wants to do in Cleveland. I can do what I want to do in Cleveland. We don't have to leave Cleveland. We can just make Cleveland great, be great in Cleveland. But if LeBron James goes, then maybe I need to second guess my own decisions. And this was a pretty common thing. Like, that city was heartbroken. So when he came back that first time, it was an angry, hurt, you know, jam-packed arena. And I understood why they booed him and yelled at him the way that they did. It's not the way I would have done it, because I understand that these are these people's lives, and, you know, once they reach a certain place in a contract where they're eligible to move, if they want to move, then why am I going to be upset when they move? But I understood why other people, Cleveland fans, who were really invested in that, I understood where they were upset. I understood where they acted the way they did. This Bryce Harper thing's different to me. If you believe the Washington Post story, he wanted to come back and play for the Nationals. Made it clear to him. Made it clear to the franchise. I want to be back, and this is what I want from a contract. And it's not like he was asking for something they couldn't do or asking for something nobody else would do. There was a market for Bryce Harper, evidence being that he signed a incredible contract with Philadelphia. 13 years, $330 million, all of it within the length of the contract. That was the market for Bryce Harper. And the Nationals wouldn't come close to that. He made it clear, I don't want deferred money. They come back with another offer that includes deferred money. And so I guess it's not my place to tell Nationals fans or any fans how to feel. But I don't know why you'd boo Bryce Harper when he runs out on that field tonight in D.C. He didn't leave you for New York or L.A. and then subsequently explain, I always wanted to play in New York or L.A. He didn't leave you for less money or even comparable money. He left you once it was clear the Nationals were not going to do what it is somebody else was willing to do to have Bryce Harper as a member of their franchise. And so if I were a Nationals fan, it would break down one of two ways. I'd either not care that he plays for the Phillies because I didn't want him on a big contract with my team anyway, or I'd be upset that my team didn't do what it needed to do to bring him back to Washington because it could have, and he wanted to, and they just chose not to. I wouldn't boo Bryce Harper, but I'm interested in seeing how he gets treated later on tonight in his return to Washington, D.C. Big thanks to everybody for hanging out with me today. It's a cool thing to sit in this chair to host the Jim Rome Show. Going to do it again tomorrow, so come back if you can. I'm Gary Parrish. I'll talk to you tomorrow, noon Eastern.